culturally, we're so focused on preparation for childbirth, we are under-preparing for everything that comes afterward. I ended up going back at 4 weeks postpartum. It was absolute hell. Looking back, it's because I didn't give myself the time to really heal.
I do not want my kids to grow up feeling that energy that they were a bother, or that they were in the way, or that they were annoying to me.
The hardest part when you're mothering and working is that I can never prioritize what I need to do because of these other obligations. Sometimes that can feel awful to be on Slack while you're on the toilet.
I pushed myself to nurse my son into a bad mental health place. The pink milk, the bleeding, the crying, the toe curling, and then also the self-judgment.
We had au pairs for 6 years. I can't understate how that transformed my experience as a mom. You can have a fulfilling career. You can have a great family. You can definitely have it all, but you can't do it alone and you can't have it all at the same time. I think the best self-care we can do for ourselves as mothers is...
Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I'm your co-host, Dr. Morgan McDermott, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Leah and I share the natural women's health and motherhood guidance that you've been looking for through our fresh, balanced, and functional lens. Today, we are talking about going back to work and all of the different things that entails, like pumping and schedules and childcare and sickness and balancing it all. Here to chat with me about it today is Dr. Jacqueline Smeaton, another naturopathic doctor and mother of five, who also has a very active career with great ambitions in places of leadership. I think that you'll love what Dr. Smeaton has to say because she's been through a lot of varied experiences, from going back to work at 4 weeks, then at 12 weeks, then working from home with an au pair. She shares many funny and relatable stories about pumping in airport bathrooms and a lot of practical tips too for those that are going to be in this season pretty soon. We get real and raw in this episode about how difficult it is being a mother and also balancing work. So let's dive in. Okay, welcome to the show, Dr. Jacqueline Smeaton. I am a huge fan of yours, and I have been ever since I was in school because of all the different work that you've done around the fertility space. And I feel like you were just the only ND, really, that I was hearing about at that time. And you've just been a mentor from afar, even though you maybe don't realize that. And so I want to tell the listeners who you are. So you're a naturopathic doctor. You are huge in the world of getting naturopathic doctors covered by insurance, which is a, you know, big problem in this country and trying to fit into the kind of conventional health model. So huge kudos to that because it just brings our services to more people. You know, you've written peer-reviewed journal articles and you're a speaker at national and international conferences, and you've been the past president of our overseeing body, which is called the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians, as well as doing all your own clinical things. So you are just like a huge inspiration in the women's like working mom field too. I mean, as a naturopathic doctor solely in and of itself, yes. But then also I think about that and the fact that you have birthed four children, you're mothering five. It's really, really inspiring. And so today we're talking all about going back to work. And I feel like there's no better person than you. So just thank you and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. And I'm going to take you everywhere with me as my hype girl because, God, you make me feel really good with that introduction. Thank you so much. And yeah, this is an area I feel really passionate about because there's like nothing in life I love more than being a mom. And I also can't imagine not working and like being able to contribute in that way. So anyway, I'm stoked for the conversation today. We're going to have fun.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just dive right in. This was a really popular request as a topic. And it's something that Dr. Leah and I don't have experience with, you know, and that's been a blessing for us in the way that we've lived our lives, but it's also has its downsides and there's no like one right way to do it, you know? But so I wanted to bring someone on, yeah, who has had that experience of having little babies and leaving the house and pumping and doing all of that stuff. And so I thought nobody, you know, better than you to ask that. And then also the preparing children for childcare or a daycare setting. And, you know, what have your experiences around that been like too? So we'll just talk about all of it. But first, can you tell us how old your children are now? And then we'll kind of go through like, what was it like for you with each of them? And then we'll start talking about pumping and schedules and hacks and all of it.
I know, we can talk about birth. I like love, I'm like so excited to dive into it. It's going to be a nice raw conversation. So my oldest actually is, he'll be 17 this week. It's unbelievable. He started his senior year of high school this week. And then I have a 15-year-old stepson. He's the one I'm mothering with in a birth. A 13-year-old son who's also type 1 diabetic. So we can talk a little bit about that too, because when you have a medical issue that you're handling, it, you know, adds to the parenting load and stress. And then I got remarried and I have two children from my current marriage that are 8 8-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old son. So we have 5 kids at home, 17, 15, 13, 8, and 6.
Amazing. Okay. And so then tell me about your going back to work after each of them.
Well, I think, so the first, oh gosh, I mean, it's like, if you could look back and like point to all the things you did wrong, right? With my first child, I got pregnant really right when I started my practice. I graduated from school. I bought a practice, started it on my own, and it went great. Like the practice growth was fine, but I wasn't really planning to take maternity leave. And of course, when you're in business for yourself, no one pays you when you don't work. So at the time, I was the primary earner for my family. And so I had to go back as soon as possible. I did not have like a financial reserve or like a lot of, you know, money to lean on. So I ended up going back at 4 weeks postpartum, which was like the minimum that I could imagine. It was absolute hell. In the end, I got mono, lost my milk supply, struggled to keep it up for a long time. I got celiac disease diagnosed shortly after. I like never recovered. It took me like a year. My postpartum just felt so hard. And I know it's looking back, it's because I like didn't give myself the time to really heal afterward. I got right back in it emotionally, mentally, like being there for patients, physically, of course, trying to juggle and pump and all that stuff. So that was definitely the most challenging time going back was with the first. And I think with your first child, everything's new. You don't know what you're doing, you know, so then that adds that element to it as well.
And where did he go when you were working?
My husband at the time worked part-time. My sister-in-law watched the baby one day a week. My mom watched the baby one day a week. We tried to get by as long as we could, really utilizing family. And then we eventually put him into a child care center, like a daycare. And that was really difficult as well. And there were like, you know, health issues. Like he kept getting conjunctivitis at school and then like couldn't go to school because he had conjunctivitis. But there was some other kid with like flora that just did not jive with his eyeballs. And every time he'd go back, he'd get conjunctivitis again. And I mean, so there, it all is difficult, right? You have to kind of find the thing that works. And for us, that really shifted over time.
Let's lay the ground of your different experiences and then we'll kind of go back and I'll ask more about the specifics. So, okay, that was your first one. Wow. I just have to say, wow, with 4 weeks, I think I was still like not even able to stand up completely straight at 4 weeks. Most part.
I know. You think about like you should be just like really not getting out of bed very much at that point. You should be like laying with your baby and nursing.
And you went back to like 40 hours a week full time?
Well, I know I went back probably 3 to 4 days a week, half days. So I was close enough to home that I could like come home to nurse at lunch. I would like take a long lunch because I was only 10 minutes from the office. I'd come home, I'd like nurse the baby, hang out, and then go back maybe for an afternoon or a night shift. So I really kind of made my schedule work around the baby's needs as much as possible. Although I did have to pump as well.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people doing this too. So hopefully this is going to be, you know, helpful for them who feel like, okay, yeah, but we have to do these things. And especially when women are the breadwinner, it is just extra complicated because nobody else can nurse the baby. Like, yes, you can pump, but that's still then eating into time. You're still also recovering from birth. There's just like so much. It's mental, emotional, physical, spiritual. It's all of the different things. And it's hard to like really grasp how all-encompassing it is, I think, until you go through it. Because it's not just like, oh, I did this like kind of hard physical event. Like I ran a marathon and then now I don't need to recover for a month after the marathon. It's like, no, guys, that's not what it's like. And newborns are up all night long. And then you're trying to go and think and be a doctor. It's one thing I've struggled with a lot is in my postpartum phase or in my just mom brain kind of phase and being like, wait a minute, I'm a doctor though. Like the stuff I say has to be correct. You know? And it's like,
it's preferred. Yeah.
Yeah. Preferred to be correct and accurate. And it is like an added pressure when you're responsible for so many things like that. So, okay, tell us about then your second experience.
Well, I think one thing, and we can talk more about this, but with my first, nursing was so hard. And that was a big shocker to me emotionally too. And I wish I had known now what I knew then, like how much support's available for people that are struggling to nurse, because I had a home birth midwife. She was awesome. But I did not, like other than her showing me to nurse, I didn't have like a lactation consultant come or anything like that. And I didn't realize how bad things were. And we can talk more about that. But like I had oversupply, then I had undersupply. There was a latch problem that was never diagnosed. Like maybe my son has tongue tie to this day. But I would be like bleeding on my nipples. It was so painful to nurse that I would cry when I had to nurse. And like, if I pumped, the milk would be pink tinged with blood. Then afterward, like I would be relieved to be done nursing. And then I got Raynaud's of the nipple. And so I had this like really intense pain in between nursing as well. And it went on for like weeks where it just felt like you couldn't get a break. And it was an incredibly difficult time. And I was so committed, especially as a naturopathic doctor, maybe a little bit self-judgmental around like the rules of what a naturopathic mother must be doing. We can talk about that. Like the pressure you put on yourself to have the birth, the postpartum, the nursing experience that you design in your head. And so it was like crushing to not have that experience and to really be struggling with something that felt like it should be so natural.
Oh, I relate to that in every single way. Like the pink blood, the pink milk, the bleeding, the crying, the toe curling, just pain with it. And then also the self-judgment, like you said. Like I think that I pushed myself to nurse my son into like a bad mental health place. And, you know, I know all of the really crunchy pro breastfeeding accounts hate it when people say that because they're like, well, it's not breastfeeding that's doing it. It's the lack of support. And I'm like, yeah, it is. But it was breastfeeding for me and it sounds like for you too, because of like the actual physical act of it was dysfunctional. And yes, like should we have gotten different and better support? Yes. And I did eventually get that support, but it was a little too late. Like the damage and the cycle that I was on of recurrent mastitis and the oversupply, undersupply, like you're talking about, and then pumping and then clogged ducts and it not getting an efficient removal, the vasospasm. So like you said, the word Raynaud's of the nipple. And in case anybody doesn't know what that means, it's basically like a vasospasm, a vascular spasm where like there's no blood flow to the area for a little bit. And they can turn like white and like purple and it hurts very, very badly. And it takes minutes to go away. And it's kind of like every time after your baby has been nursing. And so then not only are you dealing with pain during the nursing, but then they stop. And now inside your bra, your nipples are just like throbbing. They feel like they're frostbitten or something. It's so strange.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people have these issues with breastfeeding. And like, we just don't even talk about it. And yes, It is natural and instinctual, and there can be problems. And it's just like, holy crap. Like, I don't know. I knew nothing. I don't know about you, but I knew nothing about breastfeeding going into having my first baby. I thought like, we're just going to do it.
Yeah, seriously. And it's like, it's a lot like marriage where you like, you know, you do all the stuff to prepare for the wedding. And then you're like, oh God, there's a relationship to maintain after this, right? Like that, the amount of work it takes after the event is so much more than the amount of work it takes to the event. And it always surprises me as a doctor now that culturally we still teach women about childbirth. We're so focused on preparation for childbirth, which I think is a great thing. Although the whole parenting cycle from pregnancy, childbirth, breastfeeding, and raising kids, the only part that you would do on your own if you just got out of your own way is childbirth. It's like animals do it instinctually. Obviously, we have that instinct too if we can stay out of our own way. And we probably need less preparation for the birth event. I mean, we need preparation. But my point is, we are under preparing for everything that comes afterward.
Yeah. And everything that comes afterward is a lot longer of a time period than the 1 or 2 or maybe 3 day birth, you know? Okay. So, anyways, let's talk about your second one briefly.
Okay. So second baby, well, I was working full time at that point. Actually, when I'd had Miles, I knew I wanted to have a second child. That's when I started working with Emerson Ecologics. I know a lot of people, like if you're a naturopath, you probably knew that I worked there for 13 years. And my plan was actually to only work there, one, because the woman that hired me, my boss, Lise Alschuler, was like someone I looked up to as a mentor and always wanted to work under or work with. So I took that job, but my intent was also to get paid maternity leave because I did not want to repeat what happened with my first, where I felt so pressured to go back to work. So that whole entire time, I'd like hired other doctors, got my practice in a place where I could take more time off. And then I also worked in a role where I would get salary and I'd get paid maternity leave. So that was a huge difference for me because I was able to take 12 weeks of time to like physically recover from that. And that felt very, very different in a good way from a 4 week maternity leave.
Yeah. Where did that baby go once you went back to work?
So he was home. So my husband at the time and I tried to like juggle our schedules to make it work for him to be home along with family. And then he did end up going into a daycare center, which I actually really hated this place and it felt awful to send him to the center, but it was like the only one with availability. It didn't feel like a great fit. That never felt great to me, to be honest, until he was in like preschool and we were able to get him in a better location. I just didn't love the care and that was really hard. But like as a working parent with what's affordable to you, what's in your area, we were living in a more rural area at this time. It really made it quite difficult to find something.
Yeah, this is the like intersection. We talk about this a lot on the podcast is that we can have an idea in our head of how we want it to go, whether that's with the birth or the breastfeeding or the postpartum recovery or the childcare afterwards or the going back to work or whatever the topic that you're thinking of. You're going to like have your ideal plan and then you're going to have your preparation so that you can enact that ideal plan. But at somewhere along the line, you're going to intersect it with reality. And the reality is not always what we wanted it to be. So like in this case, your options were very limited. And that's going to be the case for a lot of people, or it's going to shift and change. Like something that's been our situation is like a kind of constant evolution. Like none of my kids have ever been in the same place, whether that was like some kind of a school or a co-op or a daycare, like, or a situation with a nanny share or one particular, there's never been any consistency for longer than like maybe max a year. Like now we're kind of going into the second year at this one school. Yeah. Like it's just constantly changing. And I think that that does have its downsides, but we're just doing the best we can. Like, holy moly, like there's so much going on. You can only do the best you can.
And you're also just reevaluating, you know, you're reevaluating what's available. In the end, my husband at the time, the kid's dad, he ended up backing off on work to limit the number of days that we were using childcare. And that, I think that was, this is kind of an interesting thing to talk about professionally, because that was the time when I was starting to like really push to climb in my career, where I went from the role I was hired into. In the end, the day that I was about to leave to go into my maternity leave, and it was actually the day I went to labor, my last day of work, with Spencer, my boss took me out to lunch and said to me, "Hey, I just want to let you know, like, I'm not going to be here when you come back. Like I'm moving on and I've recommended you for my role. So congratulations, you're getting a promotion when you come back." And that was like, oh, I mean, it's amazing, but like that wasn't the plan. You know, my plan was to go back to my practice and have the flexibility of time now that I've had my maternity leave paid for. Sorry if anyone's listening from my old company. It's obviously not how it worked out. It worked out great, but I came back into a new role immediately after giving birth, and it required a lot of travel. And so that was a thing that we can talk about as well, because like handling a newborn and pumping. I mean, I have some stories to tell. If you want, I can share some pretty amazing.
Let's hear it. Yeah, because pumping, I mean, and yeah, traveling with breast milk, like this is the reality of a lot of people sometimes. But even just pumping in general is such a huge topic. And this episode won't cover all of the little nuances that everybody needs to know about pumping. But the idea of how you, as like one example of a woman, have done it. And, you know, obviously your first experience postpartum and whatever was going on with baby's latch, plus also just being stressed from the sickness and the work and stuff, it didn't work out as well as you'd wanted it to. You tried and you did the best you could. But with this second time and then now with this traveling, yeah, how do you manage? What was your like routine with that?
Well, I think first of all, I'll say like my postpartum was so much easier. And I always felt like every woman I talked with, either pregnancy was hard, birth was hard, or postpartum was hard. Like there's something that doesn't click the way that you want it to. For me, on my first birth, it was postpartum. With Spencer, like things were really a lot easier. I did not have the latch issues. I was so nervous to breastfeed, like really carried a lot of trauma from my first experience, and it was way easier. I think another piece that I held on to though was I was really afraid of not having enough milk because I struggled so much with underproduction for my son after I fell ill. I did make enough milk. He nursed until he was 2, which was my goal. But then with my son, I was like really worried about not having enough. So I was a little bit probably overly concerned about like constantly pumping and getting enough milk. But traveling is hard. You're not sleeping next to the baby. You don't have that on-demand nursing that keeps your supply high. And so you really have to be regimented. And it was tempting when I was away to like sleep all night long. because you don't get that at home. But I would wake up to pump because I didn't want to lose my supply. But let me just tell you, like traveling and pumping, like this is before the age of Mama Ba or like all of those beautiful nursing stations. It was before offices had like wellness rooms or pumping rooms. So I spent a lot of time literally on the floor of like dirty bathrooms, dirty airport bathrooms, like with my pump or like on the counter because you're in a women's room and the only plug is like near the sinks. So I'm like literally sitting there facing the corner to try to not, you know, have my breasts out while I'm pumping milk in an airport. I mean, I just have so many memories of that. But I think the funniest trip was one where I went out to Seattle. I was on the board of the American Association of Naturopathic Doctors at the time. And we had a board meeting at Bastyr University. And I flew out there and we stayed in their beautiful new like green dorms. It was beautiful. We had our own room. They had a freezer. I could like freeze all my milk. But then a hurricane was coming across the country. And I was like, oh gosh, I've got like all this frozen milk. I've been gone 3 or 4 days. So it was quite a lot. And I'm like, how am I going to get home and get all this milk? My flight, all the flights are being canceled. And I had a red eye out that it was like the last one. And the hurricane's coming up the East Coast. I live in Boston. So I was going to Seattle to Boston, but I had a stop in the South somewhere. I don't know. Let's say like Charlotte or something like that. So in the end, I was like, needed to brace for the worst. And I thought, well, who knows how to pack frozen food better than anyone in Seattle? Can you guess where I went?
I should know this. I don't know. I don't have no idea.
Did you live in Seattle?
No, I went to the Bastyr in San Diego.
Oh, in San Diego. Dang. Pike's Place Market, Fish Market. It's like famous tourist attraction in Seattle. So I literally drove to Pike's Place Market and I went to a fishmonger. And they're like selling fish on ice. They ship it across the country for you, all this stuff. And I'm like, I need your help and help. And the funniest thing was that the like crew of the news was there because they were talking to travelers who were getting stranded with the hurricane. And then like a reporter stumbled upon me like, oh, are you bringing fish home? And I'm like, actually, no, I'm bringing like 4 days worth of breast milk, you know? And so it was on the news. It was just like a funny situation. And they ended up packing up all of my milk, like for like a 5 day shipment in the most insulated package they could. I shipped that home and then I ended up getting stranded. And then, you know, it just was like this complete crazy experience, but the milk survived, which was definitely my top priority at that time.
So with traveling, you have obviously needed to be considering things like 4 days worth of milk. So then did you at your house, whoever was taking care of your son, did you have a huge freezer stash of like 100 ounces or something? Or were you?
Yes.
You did. Okay. Because this is like one of those, it's not a controversy, I guess, but it's like, I think a point of misunderstanding sometimes for women who are going back to work that they think they have to have that. And obviously it would be great, but we can go back to work and pump and replace the bottles that the baby is getting. And if you can just stay like one bottle ahead, like literally 1 4 or 5 ounce bottle ahead of what your baby is needing, you're going to then go to work that next day. They're going to drink the milk that you pumped the day prior. You're going to pump new milk. And it's just going to be this continuous cycle. Yes. Is it stressful because you're sort of only one bottle ahead? Yes. And if you had a freezer stash, you have this kind of like safety net to dip back into. But I guess I just want to make sure that people know for the new moms or those that are pregnant right now, it's not a requirement. It's not, you don't have to do it like that. You can, and that's great. And especially if you have like the ability and you have tons of milk or you've gotten into a good pumping routine or whatever it is, like some women will pump and it sounds like you're one of them, which is so funny. Isn't it interesting to you probably to think back, maybe with your first, were you thinking, oh, I just am one of those people that doesn't make enough milk. Although you'd have periods of oversupply and then it goes away. But then now here you are with your second, just like chugging along with it, like pumping.
Right. Well, actually with him, I never had like that endless supply. I always was like, I had like 3 or 4 days supply of milk, which when I would do a long trip, it would be down to the last drop, which made travel stressful. Like if you had a delay getting home, but I don't think we might have had to use like a goat milk formula a couple of times. We always had it on hand as a backup. And I think that was another big piece for me was like letting go of the dogma of breast milk only. I think as much breast milk as a baby can get is great. But if you don't make enough milk, like with my first child, I would have really beat myself up over not making enough milk. But like I really have the perspective looking back because you know what? My kids are older. They're all healthy. They all are intelligent. They've all survived. They have good gut flora, like all the things we worry about. We have a good emotional connection and bond. All the things that you think about when you're breastfeeding that it's going to be impacting the future. Like, I don't think you have to be dogmatic about it. And I think the stress that you can carry around the dogma or the self-talk of like, I'm not making enough milk. The best baby is a fed baby. The best baby, like the healthiest baby is a fed baby. So if you're stressed and your baby's, you know, is hungry, I am not dogmatic about breast milk only anymore. And I probably used to be more judgmental about it for myself.
Yeah, it's something I think that we all struggle with when we've set out to breastfeed and we're like, this is going to be the way that it is. And I think that's one of the things, the wisdom of having more and more children is just like kind of having a bit of perspective around it. But there are ways to, you know, set yourself up for success and knowing what it is that you need to do. Like, you can't sleep all night in your hotel room like you want to. Like, you got to get up and you got to pump if you want to keep that supply. That nighttime feed is really, really important. And it is so tempting, like you said. And I remember doing that a couple of times. I really only pumped with my son. And then my three daughters have been in just different situations where I haven't needed to, / they didn't take a bottle. So I didn't continue that because why? But I remember one time specifically on a girls' trip where my husband came with the baby to the, it was just like a local, like a staycation. But he came to be close to me so that I could nurse my son. But in the night, we were trying to do this thing so that I could like get a good night's sleep. But I still had to wake up and pump. And I remember sitting on the floor and I'm like sharing a room with one of my girlfriends, trying to be so quiet. But you know, pumps are like, and I'm just sitting there and I'm like, wait, because I had not pumped at night before. I had always just like nursed him. He was like 12 weeks old. He wasn't old. And I was like, wait, this sucks. Like, this is so, wait a minute. Like, I just remember that moment of being like, first of all, it would be much faster to just nurse him. And then I would at least get to kiss and cuddle him. But second of all, like to wake up from a dead sleep and there's no baby here and I'm going to get up. But I was always on the verge of mastitis at that time. So I had to do it. And I knew I had to do it. But man, it just stinks. You know, it's just like one of those things we have to do as moms. It's like, ugh, bummer.
Totally. One of my closest friends from childhood, she's got 5 kids. She's a stay-at-home mom and she has never pumped a bottle. She's like never. And she never wanted a milk supply. She's like, I'm always going to be with my baby. Why do I care? And I had so much jealousy. I'm like, God, you know, you have no idea what it's like.
Yeah, that sound. And now there's all these like in bra ones too. So you can just be doing it in a different kind of a setting, which is nice to know. If you are looking for a delicious and effective supplement to help support the immune system of your entire family, from children through adults, including pregnancy and breastfeeding, look no further than the needed immune support powder. With elderberry, zinc, pre and postbiotics, arabinogalactans, and beta-glucans, this berry-flavored powder can be enjoyed on its own, or it can be mixed into smoothies, juice, sprinkled on yogurt, made into popsicles, or even gummies. It's something that I always keep on hand as part of our wellness routine, and it can support you through the entire year. Give it a try by going to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, go to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. One thing I want to ask you about, just to make sure that we don't forget to talk about it, is this like daycare and the sickness. And as a naturopathic doctor, how can we prep our children who are going to be going to that daycare setting? Or like, how can we wrap our minds around the reality of them getting sick and how to support them and all of that? Like, what would you say to somebody who's prepping for this?
I mean, nothing is worse than a sick baby, right? Like when they're stuffy and they're miserable and, you know, it's so, so hard. I think that for myself, I would do probiotics and vitamin D drops for all of my kids when they went back to school. We still do them at home. With our vitamin D, we use a liquid. And for my little kids, we call it the sweet dream medicine. And they remind me, because they don't want to have nightmares, they remind me we need the sweet dream medicine because they think that it's like helping them with sleep. It's helping me remember to give them the vitamin D, which is wonderful. That's my tip of the year. And so, I mean, I think those things, and then otherwise just like the hand washing at home and all the kind of normal stuff, but your kids are going to get sick. It's unavoidable. It's just unavoidable when they're in a daycare setting. I think the best you can do is keep their immune system healthy, keep them eating well. I love elderberry syrup. We use a lot of like elderberry-based immune products. Colostrum. We would use colostrum powder at times when they were a little bit older. I'm trying to think of my other favorite go-tos. Those are really the big ones. A lot of the things that you talk about. I tried like with my son Miles, I ended up using like the like Sovereign Silver eye drops as a preventive. And I would just do it like every other day just so that he would never get, because it's so disruptive. Like nothing's worse than like you have to go to work, you have to pay a tremendous amount of money for childcare. When babies are young in a daycare center, it's so expensive for childcare. And then they can't go because they're sick with some kind of contagious illness like conjunctivitis. And then you can't work. You know, and there's, it's so terrible. It's like bad all the way around. So we did a lot to try to prevent that with him, which that was really successful. And that was temporary. He kind of outgrew it. Yeah, those are the big things, I think.
Yep, that's great. No, I want to hear that because people just want to know, you know, what can you give and what can you do? Normally, I don't recommend herbs for babies under 6 months. But I think, though, that if they're in that situation, I would do it. You could do an elderberry. Just make sure that it doesn't have honey in it because a lot of them do have honey. But also, I wanted to mention the Exlear. It looks like it's...
Oh, yes, Exlear. It's awesome.
It looks like you should be able to say Exclear, but there's no C.
I know. I think I do say Exclear.
I do too. Exclear.
And I use that all the time now too. Like that is a daily routine. Thank you for mentioning that because that is a daily routine. Dr. Caitlin O'Connor, she's a pediatrician in Denver. She's the one who kind of put me on to that. And it's a game changer. Like I don't get sick when I'm on it. When I travel, I use it like 3 or 4 times a day. Keep it with me.
It's fantastic. And for those that don't know what it is, it's a nasal spray, like a saline spray, and they make a baby one or like a kid version that you can drop and drip into a baby's nose. Like you'd say, lay your infant on the, let's pretend that you go back to work at 12 weeks. Very classic. Okay. So you have a 12-week-old, you are getting them ready for daycare. You could use it like twice a day before they go off to daycare. And then when they've come home, and the thing that makes it different about Exlear than a normal saline spray is that it contains xylitol, like that word that's X-Y-L-I-T-T-O-L or whatever. Okay. And xylitol is a type of sugar that our body does not absorb, and it prevents the adherence of bacteria and viruses in the nasal wall. And that's our main exposure to all viruses and bacteria.
It has awesome data. It has awesome, awesome data.
Really good data specifically with COVID too, which is really nice. I remember that being like, oh, wow, cool that they did that specifically during early COVID days too. But anyway, why it's cool is that you can do it like, you know, preventatively once they are sick, it's cool too, but it can prevent the colonization, the like viral load of whatever is maybe getting up in their nose from their exposures at whatever childcare center that they're going to. But then even if they are already sick, it's still helpful because now you could take something that's potentially and most likely just a viral like stuffy nose, continue to give them Exlear, and it can help prevent that secondary bacterial like sinus infection from taking root or secondary bacterial ear infections, like any of that kind of stuff. Because when we get stuff into the nose and the back of the throat, it's called the nasopharynx. I know you know this, Dr. Smeen. I'm just explaining this for the listeners. Yeah, I don't want you to feel like I'm lecturing you on this. I'm just telling this to the people. So like when we can get that area sort of coated in this protective layer that's going to say, nope, don't come over here, bacteria and viruses, we're in a lot better of a situation. So the little baby bottle, you can stand it straight upright and spray it. Like if you squeeze it, it will just do like a fine mist.
It's a fine mist. It's different than the a little more powerful adult spray.
Yes. And the adult spray is a lot more powerful. I do use adult spray now on my like 9-year-old, but I still use the baby ones on my 6, 4, and 1-year-old. And so like you could drip it though. If you have a little infant, you just kind of do like, boom, you just drip it real fast, like turn the bottle upside down, like put the little thing right in their nose, tip it upside down. It's going to get one drop in there. Yeah, they're not going to love it. Like they don't love it. And it's okay. You as a parent, you know, your affect around it has to be very just like, yay, good job, you did it. And then move on. And like, don't make it a big deal. Like, don't call it, like, don't overreact about it. But for the older children, I get this question a lot about this specifically. They're like, there's no way my kid is going to let me do that. Like my 4-year-old, 5-year-old, something like that. And it's like, okay, well, I mean, you know, you don't want to have a traumatic event happening because you're trying to get the nose spray in your kid. But there's a lot of things that we can do. So just real quick, you could watch some YouTube videos about it. You could ask friends and family to send them you videos of them using their own nose sprays and be like, see, Uncle Jimmy does it. See, Aunt Diane does it. Da 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 da. Okay. Or you could have older children or you and your partner do it. You could have them be the one in charge to like do it themselves to themselves. So there's ways that we can do this, but like it sometimes we have to get a little bit creative, and that's okay. And even if you were to just drip a drop of Exlear onto like a Q-tip and then they swipe that in their nose. That's the beginning baby step stages of getting them to the point of doing it. You know what I mean? Sometimes kids need like a lot of... Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I just wanted to say that because it is a fantastic thing. And I think that I suggest it for parents of school age kids all the way up to like, you know, yeah, through high school in that like period of time where they're going to be exposed to a lot of things. And you're just like, man, I do not want to deal with the sickness.
Well, you can imagine we have like 5 kids at home. So we have like 1 in 1 high school, 1 in another high school, 1 in middle school and 2 in elementary. So we are sending kids still to all these areas or in public school. They come home like the amount of exposure that we all get is huge. So this kind of thing as a preventive is really big. The other thing that I'll mention, which I use in addition with my older children, is that you can get xylitol mints and xylitol gum as well, which also still gets the lower part of that nasopharynx. So that's another thing. My kids love mints and gum. Like I swear I could probably get my youngest to do anything if I offered them gum because they love gum so much. So it's great for your teeth as well. Xylitol is like a great cleaning agent because it helps with preventing bacteria that cause tooth decay. So that's another thing that I would consider adding.
Yeah, great tip. That's a really good one. The xylitol gum is really underrated, especially for the kids that have those that kind of either maybe it's like they have a poor dental flora. They maybe inherited that from us. Yeah, mouth breathing, exactly, whatever it is. Actually, one time you're making me remember a story. I was sitting at a wedding next to 2 dentists. They were married and they were talking about the research around first mouth flora and a newborn baby. And usually it's mom who's kissing baby. But like between the two of them, since they were both dentists, they knew that the husband had the better mouth flora. So they were like, they made sure that he was the one that like got all up in their baby's face and was like kissing and stuff.
Oh my gosh. That's so cool.
Yeah. So he could colonize her mouth first, like the child's mouth.
That's cool. Oral flora is so important. Like I teach a lot about the reproductive microbiome, and actually the baby's gut microbiome comes from mom's oral microbiome. Like the placenta has a microbiome that matches mom's oral flora in the third trimester. So getting good oral hygiene in place is like a major part of my preconception planning for couples. Like if you have periodontitis or you need to get your teeth fixed, it needs to happen before you're pregnant and you need to have a strong oral hygiene game.
Okay, first of all, that's kind of like gross to me for some reason that the placenta takes after mom's oral hygiene. I don't know why that just is like...
It's so weird, right? But that's where the seeding, they believe, comes from because it's nearly identical microbiomes.
And so what would you say is the way that you assess that? I know this is off topic, but people will love it anyway. What's the way that you would assess a preconception couple's their mouth health? If they don't have something like really clearly, like they don't clearly have a gingivitis, what would you say?
Yeah, I think it's not about testing. Like I don't really do a lot of testing, but if you have gingivitis, you have swollen, sore gums, your gums bleed when you floss, or you have bad breath chronically, those things all would clue me in to be like, we need to work on this. So it's usually like get a dental cleaning. I get women off of alcohol-based mouthwashes. So many people use them. It is so destructive to the oral flora. Using a healthy toothpaste. And it's really more about being proactive, eating a lot of fiber foods, flossing and brushing. Flossing is like every year I used to make it my New Year's resolution to floss consistently and I like couldn't get in it. And it changed my life to buy this amazing electric flosser that's so fun to use. And I use it, has tongue scraper. It's a vibrating flosser, but it also has these like massaging ends. Anyway, what changed it for me was that 40% of your tooth surface you can only access by flossing. So you're only like half brushing your mouth brushing your teeth if you brush your teeth without flossing. That's a huge piece of just oral care in preconception.
Wow. Okay. Is this a water flosser?
No, it's not a water flosser. Those are pretty good too. This is called a sleet flosser. They run about like $80. I honestly think it's like the best tool. I bought one. I got one for my husband. My 6-year-old is asking for one for his birthday because he's used it with a different head. And it's an enjoyable experience. I don't know how to tell you.
No, that's good. We got to do whatever we're going to do to like trick ourselves into these good habits sometimes.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. My other 2 children we haven't talked about. And that was such a different experience. So we can definitely get to that unless you have other.
No. Yeah, let's talk about it.
You know, I got divorced, remarried. We can talk about that too, if you want to, from a parenting perspective. But my last 2 kids, now one thing that was really interesting was my husband that I married, he's British. He's extremely conventional. He's like in tech. And he had 3 children prior to when we met as well. But they had really traumatic birth. He'd had really traumatic birth experiences. One baby was born, his first, at 25 weeks. So she was like rushed to the NICU, in the NICU for a really long time. Another one was emergency C-section, like not good experiences in hospital. So when I said like, hey, you know, I'm really most comfortable birthing at home. What do you think about that with a midwife? That was a very interesting conversation to have. And also we had great experiences. We had two births at home. He's like such a big home birth advocate now, which is a really cool thing.
Oh, I love that. I think that it's actually something that we don't talk about enough is how
healing.
Yes, how healing it can be for a dad, but also how much they tend to view the home birth conversation with a no at first. And I think a lot of people have this misconception that their husbands are all just like super gung-ho about it, which was actually the case in my case. My husband is almost like, he wants to have a free birth. I'm like, no thanks. I love my midwives. Like, I don't want to be the person. I want to be taken care of. Like, I enjoy that experience. He's like, you don't need anyone. Like, let's just do it. Blah, blah, blah. That's not typical, though. I think it's really common for men to have this like, no way, like, absolutely not. And then if it does end up happening where it goes on that they're like, I will never do it any other way. Like, this was fantastic, you know?
That's totally what happened. And I think my mom really was the one who convinced him, because my mom, well, not convinced, like he needed convincing, but my mom had shared her experience being at my births, which my mom had hospital births with like episiotomy. I mean, it was like the early, late 70s, early 80s when she had her baby. So like that very typical routine hospital experience of our mothers. And I think when she shared what it was like, he was more open to it. And it was such a positive experience. I think the funniest thing though was when I was pushing, I said, ow. And he was like, somebody help her. Like, can you tell she's in pain? It was that like initial like help reaction. And the midwife kind of coached him through how to be there for me. He was such a great support. But being able to be there with our family and our kids and like everyone right there and not having to go anywhere. It was like such a wonderful healing experience.
So you've had four home births then?
Four home births. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. Same.
My last baby was 10 pounds at birth, which was a big, that was a tricky one.
And how tall are you? I don't feel like you're that tall.
I'm 5'7".
Oh, yeah. No, that's taller than average.
Yeah. That's a big baby. And he's the, and my births got like, my babies were a little bit bigger and bigger. They were like 6 pounds, 7 pounds, maybe eight and a quarter, and then 10. So by my last pregnancy, I was really uncomfortable. Like that's the first time I felt uncomfortable. Then I'm like, oh, this is because I was carrying like a 1 month old in my uterus. No wonder I was uncomfortable.
Yeah. So let's talk about your third postpartum and going back to work experience.
So that was different because I was commuting over an hour during my pregnancy when I was at Emerson, and I really, this was pre-COVID, but I was like, it's not going to work for me to be driving an hour. It's like, it could be an hour and a half each way with traffic, getting through the city, blah, blah, blah. So I was lucky because I was in a place where my boss let me work from home. And that was like September 2019. And then COVID hit the following spring and kind of everybody went home. But it was such a great experience to be able to be closer to the baby. And the best thing we did was we got au pair. We had an au pair at home. My husband was working in the city. He also worked at home. We had au pairs for 6 years. This is our first year without one. And I would have, if you'd asked me, I would have been like, it's too bougie. It's too expensive. Like, who needs someone full-time at home? And they're not full-time, but they live with you and you have like very flexible hours. But not only for my ability to mother the way I want to and to have the support and feel like really, truly supported, but just for the experience of having an international woman living in our home, sharing her traditions, spending time with all of our other children. Like I can't understate how that transformed my experience as a mom.
Wow. And you know, that's not a common thing. You don't hear about that often.
Well, I think I always assumed it would be way too expensive, but like the federal program, you pay a fee to the agency, which is not cheap. It was like about $10,000 for the year, but then you pay $200 a week for up to 45 hours of care.
Only $200 a week, no matter.
Yes, that's exactly. Only $200 a week. In Massachusetts, where I am now, we have to pay minimum wage. So it's a little bit more. But even still, like when you have more than one child, the economics of that, if you have the space in your room, because they have to have their own bedroom, the economics around it for two children or more is so in the favor of the au pair program. And it is amazing. It's like honestly, like it made my life feel more balanced. They help with anything related to the kids. So we had them do the children's laundry and childcare, but they would like clean out the playroom. I'd be like, hey, the playroom closet's a little like out of control. You know how you get to that point with your kids' stuff where you're like, this really needs a deep, thorough clean. I'd be like, do you think you could kind of spend some time reorganizing that today? Or do you think you can help Charlotte like hang her clothes up in her closet again? Cause they're kind of everywhere. Anything related to the kids, they would do. And they would wash the kids' laundry for us. But other people have their au pairs like prepping meals, going to the grocery store. We never did that. I just felt like it was more than we needed. But having the flexible childcare, being able to do like a date night once a week and have that baked into our budget was awesome for my husband and I. If I had to travel or needed flexibility, or the kids were home from school sick unexpectedly, or there was a snow day, the person is right there. Like in 6 years, I had an au pair miss like maybe 2 or 3 days of work completely because they were sick. But other than that, it's like so reliable. They could drive my older children to activities if I couldn't. I mean, there were so many just advantages to it. And
that is so much like more affordable than I was ever expecting. I don't know what I thought. I just assumed it would be like,
it's for rich people.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
You're kind of blowing my mind right now.
I know. But I was thinking about what I want to talk about today. That was one of the things I'm like, I really want to share the impact that that program had. And I think on the girls too, like one of the girls, our first au pair, they're women, young women. Our first au pair was from Mexico. And she ended up, she had done a year abroad in Spain and met an American guy. And when he lived in Ohio, we're in Boston. But while she was with us, he ended up moving to Boston. They dated, they got married. My husband walked her down the aisle. Like these are our family. We've been to 2 au pairs' weddings. Another one got married in Colombia. We went, we met her family. No one spoke English. It was amazing. They were like the best dancers I've ever seen. But like we talk with all of our au pairs still. One of them, she's moved back to Argentina, but like we traveled Europe together, she and I. Like there's just, you build such deep relationships. And especially because I have a daughter, having these really strong women, and they're cycle breakers. Like one of the au pairs, you know, she had never left the city of Bogota before she moved to America. Like talk about an adventure. You know, she spoke very little English, moved to America, and now she's like traveling the world and she's never gone home, you know, and she's living her dream. And I think that that jump, like you are with women when they're in that like 18 to 25 year old phase, they're oftentimes don't have the same type of like exposure or means that a lot of us do, or we grew up with, they were privileged with. And just to be a part of that like transition in life is a gift.
I mean, you're creating the village, these other relationships with these other helpful adults that are very meaningful to your children, that your children get to have their own relationships individually with this person too. And like that, it's just, it's actually more natural. It's way more in line with what humans have been doing for millennia. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a community of aunties for sure.
Yeah. And that's so wonderful. Wow. I love that. I remember being in Sweden when I was an exchange student, and that was the track of like, you graduate high school and most of them would take a gap year and travel, but a lot of the girls were taking a gap year to be American au pairs.
Yeah. I mean, it was just such a great experience. And I think for me as a mom, like, I know if you're a mother, you know, the list is really long of the things you have to do every week, right? You have to wash the diapers, fold the clothes, cook the meals, you know, take out the trash, feed the dog, like all of that stuff. And I think one thing that's really transformed my mothering is leaning on others for support and help. And like, particularly in managing our home, we're lucky because my husband and I both work. We have good jobs. We can afford it. But like we have invested, we will travel less to be supported at home more. Like we have someone mow our lawn. We have a cleaner, and we had an au pairs that helped us with the kids. And what that did was it made it so that when I finished work, I wasn't behind. I was like there, present. I wasn't having to like wash a sink full of dishes. I could play a game with my kids, or we could cuddle, watch a movie, read a book, whatever. It allowed us to be the parents we wanted to be because we weren't buried under all the tasks. I mean, we have a lot of tasks still. It's not like we do nothing, but it really changed the way I thought about asking for help.
Mm-hmm.
And the positive, I had a negative connotation with that. Like you're spoiled, you're not doing enough. And instead, now I really see it differently. You know, I see that it's not available to everyone, but if it is available to you, I mean, I would work a second job to be able to keep those things in place because it allows me to like be present with my kids more.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for that. I think that there is kind of this, I don't know, like we have to do it all. And if we're not doing it all, then yeah, we're being bougie or we're being, and obviously if the finances aren't there, then they aren't. But I think a lot of things can actually be, you know, this comes up a lot in the birth world with hiring a doula. So people will often say doulas are too expensive. And then we start to really have the conversation around how much money are we spending on different monthly subscriptions or nails or eyelashes or different things where we can save a lot of money and put it in a different place that's more important, like potential, you know, birth support. Or this is like a point I'm always harping, birth is more important than a wedding. Like the amount of money that we spend in certain other areas of our lives, and then we won't spend it in a different area. And it makes us feel, you know, like just getting a cleaner, like, I can't clean my own house. Like, no, I'm going to clean my own house. It's like, okay, cool. But also you could figure out a way to make this work probably. And it's going to take sacrifices, but then what are the gifts and the joys that it does open up and bring to you? Like you said about being able to come home and be present and not feel swamped with all of this like task list of things to be doing too. You know, there's pros and cons.
Totally. And it's just a matter of like what brings you joy, right? Like we don't eat out as much. We don't buy coffee out ever anymore because like if we take our family to Starbucks, it's like $50 for everyone to get a drink. We would rather utilize, that's like half a cleaner for the week, right? So we would rather not eat out. Like it is, it's just prioritization and where you put your resources.
Yeah. And sometimes you have to be really kind of strict about it. And a lot of people don't want to do that. And they also don't want to face the responsibility that it would take to budget those things out. So I get it. I've been in both places before in my life. But another thing too, when you were just bringing up an alternative, different way of childcare, one thing I wanted to mention that has worked it for some friends of mine in the past is like a nanny share. In case anybody hasn't heard of that, it's the idea, you know, maybe it's too expensive for you to have a one-on-one babysitter come who's a nanny or something to your house to watch your kids while you're at work. But maybe you could find some other family who lives close to you who has a child of usually they're like the similar age, but it doesn't have to be. But you kind of create this dynamic where you're sharing the nanny. And her overall cost is obviously going to be compensatory for the fact that she's watching two kids, but you two as parents are splitting the cost. And or sometimes you'll split days. Like maybe the nanny will watch your kids Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but they watch the other family Tuesday, Thursday, and like date nights. Or you can come, I mean, the possibilities are endless, but I guess I just want to lay that out in case you'd never heard that idea that it doesn't always have to be like traditional daycare or one-on-one nanny or only family or, okay, now I can't work. I have to be stay at home or like, you know, there's so many ways to do this. And au pair is now on this list as well. And it may change. Like maybe you do that for a couple months and then, you know, something shifts and changes. So there's a whole world here. Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid, my mom and her best friend applied for a job together and they shared the role 20 hours a week each. And the 20 hours they were off, they took the kids. So they really worked together 40 hours, but like switched roles. So I have like really fond memories of growing up with this other family. Us kids were always together. And I don't know that that would happen anymore from an HR perspective, maybe in a small business, but it was a really cool experience. They both worked part-time, were able to bring some income in, and then they were both able to be at home with us. They just had another two children around.
See, like that's creating your own little village too with friends or, you know, making it that we can be creative sometimes. Okay, so then with your third postpartum, you had this au pair. Did you also have it with the fourth then?
We did. Yeah, once we realized how amazing that was, we kept it going until my son entered kindergarten. So he's in first grade this year. This is our second year. And we also have like my father-in-law lives with us half of the year. He's from Scotland, but he's with us about 6 months a year. So he's a huge help when he's around. I think that just that village and that tribe, like if you don't have it through birth, create it through your friendships. Like I guarantee you, and we can talk about this too. Like this is one of the things that's so tricky is like making friends as a mom. You know, especially if your kids aren't connected through like a co-op or a school, but it's so critical. This is a time in life where you really need other women around you. I fundamentally believe that.
Oh, I am the most pro mom date person in the world. This is how you do it. Real quick tip. If anybody's like, how do I make mom friends? You go to a park with your friend, with your baby, or your kid. It is tricky when you have like your first and they're a baby. That's when you're going to need to go to like the library sing and sign classes or like the stroller pushers in the park or like whatever. But when you have a park age kid, it's actually very easy. And then your kid is playing and you just kind of stand next to some mom and you make a comment and then you start talking. And then if you like them, you have to obviously vibe it out a little bit. But then if it's going well, you just have to be the bigger person and it's awkward. And you say, well, we should hang out sometime and see what they say. Or, you know, you ask where they live, like you gather a little information. And if you're into it, you're like, well, we should hang out sometime. They're like, sure. Like, let me get your number. There's been lots of times where I've done that interaction and then nothing, no leads take place. And that's okay too. It's sort of like maybe dating on Bumble or something. You're going to swipe a lot and then like nothing's going to happen, but that's okay. You have to cast the net. You got to like put yourself out there and then you have no idea how many amazing relationships could come from that sort of a thing. But I fully agree. Like we need to be in community. That's a fundamental human anthropological kind of like root need that women specifically then once they're mothers need, I think, for true happiness and health and healing is to be in communion, to be able to like just even to bitch about parenting and vent and then get ideas. Yeah, get ideas or be consoled in a type of way because they get it. Like, even if your partner is really, really involved, it's just different. It's never going to be the same. Like, they're not the ones that had the baby come out of their body and feed them with your own body and stuff. And it's just like to have that with others who really understand you. I think being seen in that way and really, really deeply understood is extremely underrated.
Yeah. Especially now, like in the world of social media where like a real connection, I mean, people are choosing to engage online and not look for those like real deep connections. But it takes a long time sometimes to find your tribe, but it's so important.
Electrolytes are trending, yes, but they have been in need of our human bodies for all of time. And if you're drinking another popular and delicious salty electrolyte, here's why you should be drinking Relight instead. First of all, have you ever considered the salt source of these other brands? Because most of them just use table salt. Yeah, table salt. You don't want that. Redmond's Relight Powders uses their unrefined ancient sea salt that they mine in Utah. This salt source contains 60 plus trace minerals along with calcium, chloride, potassium, and magnesium in two different forms, glycinate and malate. The minerals that they use in the Relight Powders are all in the appropriate proportions and forms too. The metabolic needs of pregnancy, healing postpartum, and milk making require more minerals than in other times of your life. Pregnancy itself demands huge increases in your blood volume, which takes, you know, more minerals. Relight is the perfect blend to be sipping during your pregnancy or during your labor even, and especially while you're breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, lemon lime, and the strawberry lemonade. But you can try a sample pack and try all the flavors for yourself and see what you think. Use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% on your entire Redmond order. That includes their OG sea salt, other seasonings, bentonite clays, toothpaste, and more. Okay, another question that I wanted to ask you is about like balancing it all. And specifically like in the context of energetics, because you are not just like, I mean, just a doctor, but you are like on the board, the president, you're the one, you're on a new level of something like that I will never attempt at even like beginning to do. You know, you're on the very, very high achieving end of things, which if we think about medicine in general is masculine energy. Education is masculine energy. Working and structure and all of that kind of stuff has an inherent masculine undertone, whereas like motherhood then is the feminine undertone. And I'm wondering if maybe in your experience, it hasn't even been an obvious kind of like flipping the switch back and forth, but how has it been for you? Like, how is it actually for you when you're looking back on your mothering little kid years? And I mean, you're still doing that to do these things, to balance not only just like all the stuff like you're talking about, the dishes and the laundry, but your mindset, your energy, your spiritual energetics of all of that.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think like it's funny that you talk about like the masculine and the feminine because I think there was a time where I was really out of balance with it, where that overachiever or like masculine energy, as you described it, the ambition, the pushing, it was out of balance with where it is now and where I really like it to be. One big shift I think that changed that for me was my partner. you know, at the time, like, I didn't feel supported. I didn't feel like, you know, in my first marriage, like, I had that space to exhale. You know, I felt like I was holding it all together. And it almost becomes this like self-fulfilling, perpetuating prophecy where you like can't let anything go. And, you know, I'm not going to distill like whether that was him or whether that was me or whatever, but I know now in my relationship where I can do that, it allows me to step back because I feel like someone's like, I got this, you know? So that's one piece of it. I think the other piece is, I think it's sometimes when you get in the like robot mode or like that hamster wheel, it can feel really hard to get off. And I actually see this in my husband sometimes too, where it's hard for him to change because we work from home, from work mode to kid mode. But if you're on vacation for a week and you're in kid mode, you're moving at their pace, you're slowing down, you're doing the thing, you don't even want to check your email for work, or like, it's not frustrating if things take longer, you know, and it part of it is just a mindset. And I think it is that kind of that balance and that shifting gears. But you can definitely have it all, but you can't do it alone and you can't have it all at the same time, I think are the two ways that I think about it. And if anyone ever thought, God, you really do it all, they like don't really have insight into my life, because it's a shared communal effort to create the family that you want. And now even more so with our kids being older, we really have like a work hard, play hard mentality where, and I think this is a really healthy thing that a lot of kids miss. Every kid, we need every kid in our house. We need their help. We need their opinions. We need their personalities to like fit together as a family. And I had this, I was talking to my husband about it last night, because at dinner, like after dinner, like the cleanup for dinner, like everybody's involved in it. And it was funny because I actually went to the bathroom, and one of our kids, we joke, he always goes to the bathroom after dinner and then like walks out when the cleanup's done. But I did that last night. But when I came out, I really did have to go to the bathroom. I wasn't trying to sneak away from the work. But when I came out and I saw the whole family unit working together, anyway, that's just what you realize. Like it's not, you can't do it alone. You can't. And so if you're a person who's trying, it's exhausting. I've been there. You know, but you can have a fulfilling career. You can have a great family. And right now for me, I'm like, I'm not pushing ambitiously. I'm not on social media very much. I like really think about what speaking engagements I accept. I say no a lot. And that's because, especially now that I have older children, you realize that those years, they say like the nights are long, the days are long, but the years are short. And that's really true. And I know we're talking about, you have your oldest is getting older and a little sassy maybe. And you realize like, I only have so many more years and my kids are going to really, really want to be around me before they start to, in an age appropriate way, develop good connections with peers and want more time with them or jobs or boyfriends and girlfriends. So just trying to cherish that and know that right now I'm in a season of family, and in 5 years, my family obligations or time constraints are going to lift, and I'm going to have a season where I can put more effort into building something else.
And would you say that maybe, you know, 10 years ago, you were more in the season of work?
Yeah, because I was pushing, because I felt an obligation to like provide, and that was necessary. Like, you know, I make more money now than I did then. It's not like it was not worthwhile, but there's sacrifices involved. You know, if you want to push in your career, it's a sacrifice for you and for your family, right? And I think you do the best you can to make sure everyone has love and they have a parent around. If you are in a two-parent household, that's lovely because you can both be there with kids and kind of lean on each other while the other one is pushing professionally and have your kids not miss a beat or like not even know what's happening.
Yeah, it reminds me of the four burner theory, which, have you heard of that four burner theory?
No.
So it's like if you had a stove, you can't have all four burners on at the same time. So, and the four options are family, friends, work, and health. So when you said, you know, you can have it all, it's just not all at the same time. It's like, yeah, if your burner for family is going to be on full blast, the others are going to have to be turned like way down or maybe even almost like off. And there's going to be opportunities and time for our work, our career, our friends to be really fulfilling and full, our health to be, you know, our self-care is on point. And I feel like sometimes we are just trying so hard to keep them all at 25%, like an equal spread. But then think about that. It's like, no, but then everything sucks.
It's all undercooked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's all raw salmonella chicken. Like nobody wants to eat what you're cooking. And I think that there's this concept of seasons, especially with women, and the season of, we have that inherently with our menstruation and our reproductive years, right? Like we have our childhood years where we don't have it. Then we have our reproductive years and we go into menopause, or, you know, perimenopause, menopause. But there's also just these like seasons of what am I capable of doing? But something that's really like rude, like I find it to be rude, and I love to know your perspective, is that in the season of women climbing their career ladder or building their business or doing whatever they're trying to do in that like late 20s, early 30s, like throughout their 30s, is the time when we have the option to have babies. And it's like, I remember when I was in medical school, there was like 9 babies born in our very small class in 1 year, because, and me included, I had my first child in school. Don't suggest that, but like, you know, I'm glad now in retrospect that I did, but it was very difficult. But I was like, what do I do though? Like, how do I manage this? Because I want to start my family, and you know, takes a long time. If you want to have lots of children, it's a 10-year process or whatever. And it's just sort of this like unfortunate thing that I think is hard to manage as a woman. And in this now newer society where women are working and often have to for the income side of things, like, you know, you can choose to be a stay-at-home mom, but usually there's like a lot of sacrifice financially, or it's rare because of then like whatever your partner's job is going to be is like enough for the family. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Like, do you vibe with that, or you don't see it that way?
No, I think it's really tremendously hard. And I think I've definitely thought a lot about, you call it like feminism or whatever, but like the role of women and the role of men. And I think that women, like, thank goodness for the efforts of our grandmothers and our mothers, the opportunities that are open to us are tremendous, right? Like, you went to medical school. I went to medical school. We have a world of options available to us educationally and professionally. There's really nothing that women can't do if they want to do that. And at the same time, I think what we see, and you hear this a lot online with like negativity towards men, and I think that's a little bit misplaced, but I think culturally we have put so much emphasis on women doing more, but we haven't figured out how to piece together a family in a way that works for both partners and for the kids. And that pressure is still falling on mom, right? To like work the job and be the primary caregiver at home, or, you know, and I think that it is rude. It's rude that those things align. It creates a lot of difficulty on the backs of women and their families. And it takes a lot of ongoing conversations really to be able to navigate that successfully with your employer, with your partner, with your family, with your support network. I think it's a new challenge that we face that we probably didn't have 2 generations ago.
Yeah. And it's even somebody today messaged me and they were like, how they want to homeschool their child, but they work from home for their own business. So it's flexible, but they're the main breadwinner in their family. And so she's like, what do you do? I am not the main breadwinner in my family, but I still do work from home and homeschool my kids, but they are also now in a co-op. So I was explaining to her, well, they're gone from this hour to this hour. My baby naps at this hour. So I really have like an hour and a half each day where I can get uninterrupted work, sort of, because I live on this community compound and there's like constantly people coming in and out of my house and stuff. But like, I try to put a boundary around that block if I can. But most of what it looks like for me is my computer is on the island in our kitchen, and I am changing a poopy diaper, coming back, finishing the email, getting somebody something to eat. And then I'm like, I'm pooping and I'm on Slack on my phone answering a question to the, you know, and then I'm in the shower and I'm having all these ideas and I am fearful I'm going to forget, because as soon as I get out of the shower, my toddler has been in the bottom drawer of my bathroom ripping everything apart. And so I pause the shower, get out, write the things down, you know, and it's like that all day long. And it is very exhausting. And I know it's temporary too. Like, I know it won't always be this hectic and crazy, but I just think like, I don't know what's the best way to do this? Like, how?
It doesn't feel that when you're in it, like, oh, this will pass. Like, that's not what you're thinking. You're like, oh, this is so hard, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's so hard. And I'm just like, but for me right now, it's not hard enough to make me want to like have it more structured to take that leap into paying the childcare to watch the baby. So I have even more, you know, because, and honestly, realistically, I don't think we could even afford that right now. It's like to send the three to the school that we do kind of taps us out. So it's just this constant thing. I guess my point in sharing all of that, and I loved all of your stories. Thank you. And they're so diverse, which is really cool because as your motherhood journey has gone, although your career has always been amazing and it's shifted and changed, like you've had these different, you've had to learn, like, that doesn't work. This works best. This is what we like. Oh, wow, this is amazing. And I think that's just the whole point is that it's always going to be in flux. And that I don't think is highlighted in our society. It's sort of like we think, oh, well, I'm just going to do this one thing and then I'm going to do that for the next like 30 years. It's like, no. Probably it's going to change a lot. And you're going to try new things and hate them or find pieces that you do like. And as women, as the primary caregivers of our children, most of the time, there is a specific type of like amazing opportunity and honorable responsibility we have for tending to our children, but it is intersected with this like very hard to do it all kind of energy in our culture of like the career building and the, you know, you don't want to stop and then it's so hard to get back into it. And I don't know, I just like, I think about it a lot because although I'm not in that because I don't leave the home, so I kind of feel like I'm not in that, but I am. I am actually. I have a business. I have a podcast. Like, yeah, I just am doing it a little bit untraditionally. And it is whack.
It's whack. And I think the hardest part when you're mothering and working is that, I mean, maybe it's self-pity, but one thought I've had sometimes is like, I can never prioritize what I need to do because of these other obligations. And that is the deal that I signed up for. And sometimes that can feel awful to like be on Slack while you're on the toilet, right? Like trying to piece it together to make it work, it can feel unfair. It can feel too much. It can feel really hard. It's a juggle. But absolutely, I agree, like it will pass. I mean, right now, that's one of the reasons why we don't have an au pair now. My kids go to school and then they do like an after-school program at their school because I drop them off at 8:15 in the morning. I pick them up at 5 o'clock and I have a work day that's not interrupted. Like I don't, and when the kids were at home with the au pair, I loved that I could have a snack with them. I loved the time I got. But it's a sacrifice for work because there's times where they like walk into a meeting or they're asking you for something. And one thing that was really hard for me, maybe some parents that are listening can relate, is like when my kids are around, I want to be on for them. Like I want to be 100% on for them. I want them to know. I want them to think I don't do anything else but be their mom, right? That not to the extreme, but like, I don't want them to be like, hang on, I have to check this email. Hang on, I have to do this thing. But like when you're on the clock working a job and your kids are at home, this is one thing that's tough for me about summer when they're home is I feel like I'm often saying, that's okay, I'm going to help you with that, but you got to wait. I got to finish this up. And I wish that wasn't the case. I don't like them seeing that they're not number one in my life at that moment. So I like having that freedom and that separation because, again, when I'm with them, I can be 100% on. When I'm with work, I can be 100% on. And it can be really hard to split your time. So, Morgan, I don't envy you, and I, like, really honor how hard that is to be doing that juggle. Do you have something that's, like, a non-negotiable for you personally that you hang on to that kind of helps you be present?
Yeah, at night though, for me. So I was just going to say, I'm really bad at like what you just said. I have that as a goal and I have not figured it out yet. So it's a constant work in progress for me because I am like, there's a lot of the times, you know, that my kids are in that age where they just want to tell me random stuff all the time. Mom, I saw somebody on the road who was bicycling and they didn't have a helmet on. And I'm like, cool. You know? Yeah. And I don't want to be sassy to them. I do not want my kids to grow up feeling that energy that like they were a bother or that they were in the way or that they were annoying to me. But sometimes I feel like that. And it is so hard to try to like keep my, first of all, it's my expectations are off, like way whack. Like I do not know why I think I can do all the things that I can in this setting. But I do just continue to do it. And that's my own dysfunction that I need to figure out because I should really let go of a lot of this stuff. And it's tricky when, like, you know, it'll go well for a couple of weeks and I'm like, oh no, I got it. Like, I can do it. And I feel like Superwoman and I'm on top of the world. And then I'm in my luteal phase and someone's sick. And then my husband goes out of town and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. Go get your vasectomy. I'm putting the kids in public school. I'm hiring a nanny for the baby. I don't want to see a kid. Like, get away from me. You know what I mean? And then I go take my homeopathic sepia and then everything feels better.
Sepia is life changing.
Sepia is life changing. If you don't know, or if you know, you know. But my non-negotiable right now, and then I'll let you go because I know that our time here is up. But mine is bedtime, which I know doesn't even work into this in the way that I think you were expecting it to work. But I shut off at night because I'm so on. Every single second, my eyes blink open. And I'm not the type of person that wakes up before my kids. I should, and maybe one day. I'm not in that season, and I don't feel shame for it. I can see the benefits of that when people are like, you should wake up before your kids and have your time. But right now I like to sleep and I read late. I love to read. That's my new thing as of the last couple of years. And so I read late into the night sometimes, and then I need that sleep on the back end. So anyway, my eyes blink open and I'm 150 miles per hour all day long until like 8 o'clock hits. I get my three girls to sleep. And then my son is always more of a challenge because he wants to stay up late. And it's just like kind of always a thing for him. But so I have a very hard boundary with the bedtime, like what's happening with that. I mean, not if we're out and about, if we're at a friend's house, like whatever, I'm not going to be like, guys, got to leave the party because it's bedtime. It's not because of that. It's because my brain shuts off and I need to have like peace. And I want to read and maybe hang out with my husband and not have it be that our conversation is interrupted 100 gajillion times. Like, I can only handle so much interruption. So that to me is a very hard boundary. And what's challenging about that right now is that my husband does not feel this way. He does not really care. He's kind of he's very relaxed. And I love that about him. But he's just sometimes like, oh, it'll be 9:15 and I'm getting back maybe from like a girl's night. And our son's still awake. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, because I don't even want to be a part of it now at that point, because it's going to be a fight. There's going to be tears. So often if he's in town, if my husband's in town, because right now he has a job where he's working a ton. And this is another new layer for me that I have to shift my expectations because his job is the priority. Like, I always have to defer to him. And that used to be really hard for me because it feels like, yeah, it feels unfair. Like, you mentioned that word. And I was like, yes, I feel sort of disrespected sometimes in like the importance of my work, not because of him. Like, yeah, like he isn't disrespecting me, but it just feels like there's this unwritten thing where it's like, I defer to him. But also like in our dynamic, duh, because he's making so much money. Like, we're not like he makes a tons of money, but I'm just saying he is the breadwinner. Like his job is.
That's the agreement you all made. That's the agreement you made when you set up your family. Yeah.
Yes. And so we need to stay with that.
It's okay to agree and then also be mad about that. That's okay. It's okay. You can have those feelings.
Yeah. Because that's how it feels like, oh my gosh, like, okay, well, I had this scheduled and he's like, no, I have a meeting or I'm in Montana or I'm doing this or whatever. And I'm like, okay, all right. You know, but anyways, at night though, I have a very consistent routine of taking a really, really, really hot bath. It's kind of a habit stack where I take a super hot bath, 110 degrees, with a ton of Epsom salt, and I read my book and I sweat my ass off. And I think it's multi-purpose. It's like my detox, it's my relaxation, it helps me sleep. It's also my way of getting away from the bedtime difficulty with our son. Like, my husband deals with it. I'm just like, I'm not dealing with this because I cannot be patient because I'm at my limit. Like, I've been patient all day long and I'm not patient with this. And he always is pushing with it. And so it's just like, I can't be a nice person anymore. So I need to remove myself from the setting, you know?
I mean, I think it's good to have those non-negotiables, particularly when you feel like you are the default parent or you are by the design of your family. Like, there, and I think figuring out what that is, like for me during COVID, it became working out. Like, I have 30 minutes a day where I work out. And like, if my kids come to me, I'm like, I tell them I'm invisible right now. You don't talk to me when I'm working out. Like, cause you're in the middle of a lift. You're like, ugh. And they're like, can I have a snack? You're like, don't talk to me. Wait, just wait. 8, 9, 10, you know. I think having that boundary really changed my mothering because for a long time, I felt like my cup was empty. It was limitless what would be asked of me. And whether or not this was true, this was the way I felt. This was my experience of that like overwhelm or wishing I had more support than I had. But when I carved out, like, this isn't something that's important to me, maybe it's going to a yoga class, maybe it's reading 30 minutes a day, maybe it's playing the guitar, learning a hobby, painting, whatever you're into, I think it's so, or a bath, a hot, uninterrupted bath, like, that is not too much to ask, right? Like, everybody, you should be able to craft some kind of situation where you can get that on most days. And that really changed it for me. And when I think about self-care, because we use that word a lot, I think the best self-care we can do for ourselves as mothers is to, like, make commitments and hold to them for ourselves, show up for ourselves the way we show up for everybody else. And I think if that feels hard, starting with just one thing that you want to do consistently that will make you better in some way, more creative, more fit, more healthy, more relaxed, whatever that is, honoring that commitment is like, was the ultimate gift I gave to myself as a mom and the ultimate self-care. And I still do it. And now my dogs come in sometimes, but my kids usually leave me alone.
Yeah, sometimes my dog comes in too. Well, and I love what that teaches our kids too. And I sometimes say this, and I have a friend who says the same thing too. Like, I'll be like, I am a person. Like, when I'm getting really overwhelmed, you know, or they're just asking so much of me, I'm like, you guys, I also have to eat. Like, I also have to do these things. Like, I'm a real person. I know that sometimes it feels like I'm your, like, just not slave, but, you know, like, like I'm just your butler or something. I'm not. I'm a real person, you know? And it does give them some perspective. And they're like, oh, yeah, like, okay, yeah, you're right. I'll be like, no, I'm going to do this right now. And it's not rude. I'm not being rude to you. I'm not mad at you. I am prioritizing myself. And you have all your needs met. And you can wait with whatever extra thing it is that you want. You can wait right now because I'm taking care of me. And that's something that I feel like we didn't see in our parents' generation, or at least I didn't.
Oh, yeah. Or no, not communicated for sure.
Yeah, and not communicated, exactly. And sometimes I should say it a little nicer, because sometimes at that point I'm like, I'm a person. know? I should be a little sweeter about it, but it's not always realistic. And it's like, you know, we talk in my family a lot about being a team and working together as the flow of the house and the way that we have to work as a team and being on the same page and do things we don't want to do, like cleaning up the kitchen together after dinner, as you mentioned. And it's so beautiful, actually, when we all work together, because it's fun. Or maybe it's not fun, but it is so efficient. And it does feed into that, like, human cooperation need that I feel like we do have, where we want to be in communion with other people working in a cooperative manner towards a bigger goal. I think that is, like, something that we actually all need. It is in line with, like, the blue zone idea of the people in those blue zones where they live to be over 100, statistically significantly more than other areas. They are needed still in their communities. They have purpose. They're not just sitting in, like, an elderly home, but they have, like, a role where people depend on them, and it feels good to help in that setting. And so we can get the whole everybody kind of working with it, and then respecting of each other's boundaries and time and space and, you know, alone time. I never used to need alone time. And now that is when I get it, is at night. I do need it. And it's just, again, it's shifting and changing based on the seasons, of course. Because when you have a little baby, you can't really do that. But right now I'm in a good setting where I can get into this good groove, and it really does make a huge difference. So anyway, okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Jacqueline. This has been, like, really, really great to have you on. And I already have a note here that I want to schedule you again for a dental health and pregnancy episode. So I'll be reaching out to you. But thank you for your time. Is there anything else that you want to leave the listeners with?
No, I mean, thank you so much for having me. I love these kinds of conversations. And I think, like, what you and Leah have done to kind of open up those conversations about motherhood and, like, and our type of mothering, right? The really engaged, maybe more natural mom that, like, you know, but I think sometimes it can feel isolating. It can feel like you're the only one feeling that way. And you guys have really broken down the barrier. So I'm really honored to be a part of your conversation. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Kids get sick. It's natural and normal. It stinks, but there are things that we can do to support their immune systems, their symptoms, and the progression of the illness. And so it's something I'm asked all of the time, and I created a course for you. So if you've ever been wondering what are my top remedies, the homeopathics, herbs, nutraceuticals, home remedies, supplements, anything and everything that I like to use for pediatric immune health from newborns on to big kids, I have made a course for you, and it is called the Natural Cold and Flu Care Course for Children. Not a very original name, but it's very useful, and you will use it again and again to revisit it each time that your child is sick. So you can find the information for that in the show notes.
order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.